Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
Welcome to the OC Bitches.
Welcome to the OC Bitches. So to our lovely, wonderful, beloved audience, Rachel and I, and a special guest, we are remote. And there's a reason for that. And I'm going to show the audience really quick. I'm in Puerto Rico, and this is pretty spectacular. Wow. Okay. So
goodness.
So you know, for those watching,
I'm in a hotel room
in Puerto Rico. So just so you know where we are. So let's get into this, because today's guest is Billy Campbell, a.k.a. Carter Buckley, a 40-year veteran. This Golden Globe-nominated actor made his debut on Family Ties in 1982. He then went on to numerous notable roles on TV such as Dynasty, Armistead, Maupin's Tales of the City, Once and Again for that Golden Globe nom, and on film, The Rocketeer, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Enough with JJ, and Gods and Generals with Jeff Daniels and Robert Duvall. In 2019, he was the voice of Dave Secord in the animated series version of The Rocketeer for Disney Junior. Billy is currently in development on the fifth season of his most recent show, Cardinal, for which he won the Canadian Screen Award for Best Actor, to be shot in Sweden instead of Canada, and it may be the best role of his career. All the way from Norway, please welcome the highly interesting Billy Campbell. Did I get anything wrong?
How am I supposed to even say a word after all that? Highly interesting. No, you didn't. No, there was nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to see you guys again. What? There must be something in the water. You don't look any different than when I saw you last time.
Well, the computer does wonders, doesn't it?
But right. It's the indirect light from Puerto Rico. Yeah.
But it's so nice to see you and for you to join us all the way from Norway, which is very far.
Yeah. What is it now? Almost 8 p.m. my time. So it's about a half an hour past my bedtime.
Oh, boy. We're keeping you up late.
So you live there with your family?
I have kids.
Yeah. How did you end up in Norway?
I ended up in Norway because I went sailing. I went sailing on a Norwegian tall ship, I met a Viking lass who kidnapped me some years later, and now I live on her family's farm in the south of Norway, where they have been living for 450 plus years. And I'm happy as a clam. I live on a pickle farm. They grow wheat and cucumbers.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I remember truly, honestly, being highly fascinated by you, because you brought this up, when we were on the show, there was a reason that Carter Buckley was growing a beard. And it was because you said you were going off on this epic months-long trip to being on a tall ship, and you were going, if you can describe, you literally were going to work on the tall ship, this experience of a lifetime, I guess. And is that the same one, or did you do multiples?
It may be. You have to remind me, what was the year that we did the season?
This was
what year?
It was 2005 we were shooting.
2005. So I was about to go off. I was about to go off on a year-long round-the-world voyage on a ship called the Picton Castle. It's a different tall ship than I had just the previous sailing season, the previous summer, met my Viking, who will probably come say hi if I can. No, she won't. She's Norwegian. She's too shy. Okay. The previous season, I had sailed on a Norwegian a tall ship, and I had met her then. So I already knew her for maybe a little less than a year when I met you guys. And then I went off to sail on a Canadian tall ship, which does circumnavigation. So I sailed right around the planet and took about 10 months or so. And then I stayed friends with my Norwegian friend. And then, I don't know, some years later, we were like, why not make it permanent?
Wow, that is so super cool and very original and different and not something you hear every day.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, you know how it is. I came to LA and I wasn't even sure I wanted to be an actor, but I followed somebody out to LA and one sort of thing happened after another, and I got very lucky. I mean, we all know people. I know plenty of people with mad skills, much more than I have, and who didn't get lucky. And there's just a huge dose of luck in everything we do. I'm convinced of it, or karma, or whatever you want to call it, God, or what have you. But I was getting. You know the thing about LA, it's there are no seasons, right? We have the June gloom, we have the May gray, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. And so before you know it, you know, after years of being afraid to leave town because you're afraid you might miss something, I was sitting on the edge of my bed up in Pacific Palisades, and I thought, what the hell just happened? I'm 40. I was 22 just like a couple of years ago when I moved to LA.
I know the feeling.
So I kind of panicked and I thought, you know, I need to do something else. And I have always been in love with the sea and with the notion of ships. And so I just went sailing and it changed my life.
That is just really cool. And an inspiring story, I would say. But Billy, I don't know if we, because people who are listening are aware that I have no memory. I'm telling you, I have no memory, but I met you when I was a child.
I remember you.
You do? Okay, so you know what I'm,
I did.
Where I'm going
when
with
your
this.
Dad brought you to, yeah, your dad brought you to the set.
Right, yes. So yeah. My dad, yeah. Danny Bilson, wrote The Rocketeer. And Billy was the Rocketeer. And it was the coolest thing ever, especially as a kid, showing up to that set. And you were basically a superhero. And it was really awesome. And it's a fun little connection that we have.
Yeah. Well, give your dad my best, will you?
Yeah, I will, for sure. He's going to be thrilled that I...
I was sorry to hear about Paul.
Yeah, my dad's writing partner passed away a few years ago. Yeah. But yeah, they wrote The Rocketeer together and... It's kind of funny that I was probably, I don't even know, maybe 7 to 9 years old or something like that.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there we were.
I remember when I first came to, I don't remember a lot of the OC, to be honest, because it was, I don't know what was going on in my life at that point, but it was a bit of a blur, I think. But I do remember showing up to the OC and you were like, hey! I was like... And it just took me a moment. I was like, before I made the connection.
Funny. Small world.
Well, congrats on Cardinal. It is at the top of my list now because, you know, it's so wonderful to make these connections or reconnecting with people. And I watched the trailer and I read about it. And first of all, I have to say, how brave of you to do it in Northern Ontario in 40 below weather. And if you want to tell our audience about this amazing, it looks very thrilling and pretty epic. Are those good words to describe it?
I think the sort of the roles that can come along that you feel like you can inhabit are maybe not so often at least not in my experience. And this is just one that came along that when I read it, I saw I don't know how you guys are, but I have a tiny casting director that lives in my head. And if I don't see myself in the role as I'm reading it, I have a very hard time getting up to even go on an audition or even, you know, taking something if it's offered. I feel like a fake or something.
An imposter.
But an imposter, I don't know. And I feel so self-conscious that I can't even do my job. But I read this within the first couple of pages of reading Cardinal. I knew, I could see myself in the role. I got super, super excited. But I had promised, my partner, my wife, that I wouldn't take anything. She still had a year of architectural studies to do. And I had promised that I would stick around to help. We had a small boy at that time. And so I turned it down without even telling her about it. And I didn't want to pressure her or anything. And then, thank goodness, a few weeks later, my agent called my manager and said, the folks from Cardinal are sniffing around again. They want to know if no really means no. And I just got this, this twist in my chest. And I thought, well, I'll just tell my wife about it and give her the option of, you know. And so I did, and I told her about it, and I said, look, if, you know, I've already turned them down once, and if you say no, I have no problem with that, then I will hang around. And she said, well, can I read it? I said, sure. I'm not sure she'd ever read a script in her life. And she read it, and I spoke to her the next morning. She was actually on a study trip, so she was, I think, in Japan or something. But the next time we spoke, I asked her what she thought, and she said, "I think you ought to do it." And I was like, "Are you sure? I promised you." And she's like, "Ah, we'll work it out. Don't worry about it."
Aww.
And yeah, that's a Viking for you. So. So I got to do it, and I went to Northern Ontario, and as you said, it was 40 degrees below zero on our first day of shooting. And the very first scene was us getting gas at a gas station. So I had to stand against the back of the car and kind of bask in the sunshine. and Corinne, my partner in crime, had to pump the gas. And then I walk off camera to get us coffee. And as soon as I'm off camera, I sprint for the gas station to get inside the warmth because my ears are falling off my head. I mean, it was so bloody cold that equipment was malfunctioning. The grips, these big, burly Northern Ontario boys and gals, the boys anyway, are walking around having an icicle growing contest in their beards. So they're kind of clinking as they move. And it was amazing. And it was a great, great show for me, maybe the best role I've had in my career. And the karma has come back because we were done after four seasons. But Sofia Helin, who is a Swedish actor, she was half of the pair of actors who were the leads in The Bridge. I don't know if you know it, The Bridge, the Swedish show, Swedish-Danish show.
I think so.
She saw Cardinal and she loved it so much that she got in touch with our producers and said, what about another season with me, meaning her, playing the bad guy? So
so you're moving to Sweden
or playing
now.
A character. Well, no, he's not moving to Sweden. This case has roots in Canada, and so he has to go over and investigate some stuff in Sweden. So,
are you shooting in Sweden?
Yeah, shooting in Sweden.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's a little closer.
It's fantastic for me because I get to I get to come home on the weekends, or Anna and the kids can come visit in Sweden. So yeah, I'm super excited.
Yeah, that's pretty convenient.
Meal prepping for the week can be extremely difficult, especially when you are looking for high-quality, sustainable meat. ButcherBox is a subscription service that sources their meat with the highest standards of quality, and that makes me feel good. They also have chicken, pork, salmon, everything that I need to make a delicious meal for my family at any time. It's in my freezer.
We are big fans in my household of ButcherBox. We love using the grill. And knowing that we're getting really high quality products, we have had amazing steaks, even lobster. We love ButcherBox. Every month, ButcherBox ships a curated selection of meat. Each box contains between 8 to 14 pounds of meat. There are no added hormones or antibiotics and free shipping in the U.S.
This is your chance to never have to shop for ground beef again. That's right. ButcherBox is giving new members free ground beef for life. Wow.
Sign up at butcherbox.com/theoc to get 2 pounds of ground beef free in every order for the life of your membership. Log on to butcherbox.com/theoc to claim this deal. I love Cocoa Floss. It's the softest, most cleansing dental floss, and it's non-toxic and eco-friendly. I love how gentle it is on my teeth and my gums because they are sensitive, and it's even great for my daughter, who's 7. She loves it.
So I went to the dentist just a couple weeks ago, and I asked my hygienist if she knew about Cocoa Floss, and she said yes. And she recommends it to all of her patients, finds it totally superior. I kid you not, it cleans all of the junk that the stuff that just slides right by doesn't get. Try Cocoa Floss. It holds strong too. Typical floss glides over plaque while Cocoa Floss captures it.
Avoid mask breath by flossing daily. Go to cocoafloss.me/OC to get 20% off the 4-spool set and free shipping.
That's cocoafloss.me/OC and the discount will automatically be applied at checkout. All orders over $20 ship free in the U.S. I think that's the hardest thing Rachel and I, we've discussed with almost everybody, is sometimes the quality of life that, you know, being away from kids can be the most painful part of this industry. And yeah. it's such a duality we feel so conflicted, and, you know, it can be a difficult thing. I mean, some kids can handle it better than others, I feel like it's us that it's a little bit more painful for, right?
I did a pilot in Vancouver last year. Time is just like, but I was there for, I don't know, I guess 6 weeks or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to see Anna or the kids that whole time. And I didn't get to make it home. And I remember being in North Vancouver one day, walking down the seafront. And a dad was coming the other direction with his, like, 6-year-old boy, 5-year-old boy, holding hands. And the boy was just crying his little face off. I don't know of course, I don't know why, but I passed them and I stopped and I burst into tears myself.
Oh, no.
Because I just missed them so much. I missed them so much.
Yeah.
And so.
It's definitely the hardest thing.
Thankfully, if I'm shooting in Sweden early next year, I'll be home on the weekends.
Aw, yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, we talk about it a lot. It's definitely the hardest part if you're a parent, I believe, in our business. Mm-hmm. But when you were on the OC, obviously, you didn't have kids yet and you still lived in LA, and it's probably a little more manageable. I mean, how many episodes did you do? Do you know?
I want to say like maybe 6 or something.
Yeah, you were on, you had a good arc. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I just watched episode 19 and 20 again, which was super fun.
Thank you for watching the episodes.
Oh, I mean, the only horrible thing about it was having to watch myself. I just can't. I have a difficult time watching myself, especially if I'm self-conscious. If I'm self-conscious, and part of the reason that I part of the reason that I grew a beard on the show was that I'm terribly self-conscious without one.
Really?
I think it's kind of my way of hiding, I think, a little bit. And so I think what happened was I didn't need to have a beard because I was going sailing. I could easily grow one when I am sailing. But I think I made up some excuse, like I had to have a beard.
No, that's the real story.
Yeah, that's the real story. And because I remember Sean, my manager, saying, yeah, I said, yeah, I'd love to do, I'm happy to do the OC, but let them know I have a beard. And they were like, and he called back and he was like, they do not want a beard. They don't want a beard on you. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, geez, can we play hardball? And he was like, rather not. Let's just, you know, like, can we try to make an excuse? It went back and forth. And then I think that we arranged compromise. And the compromise was that I had to start without a beard and then grow one as we progressed. So, if you'll notice, if you watch the show, mm-hmm. you can see that I'm much, much more self-conscious in the early episodes before I have any hair on my face.
Oh my God.
And well, Carter is the only character that was ever allowed to have a beard under the understanding that Billy said, production knows I'm going on this year-long tall ship trip and I need this beard for this. And I drilled you about it. And I was like, wow, that's fascinating. You really have to you have to get your calluses worked up. You got to get the face covered. You know?
I didn't want to blow my cover at that point. If I had been truthful, I would have told you it's all bullshit. But
that's funny.
That is very funny.
Did they offer the role to you, I would assume?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. I mean, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
So that gave me a little bit of leverage.
Right. But yeah, we just love you. We keep talking about you, you know, as we're going through these episodes, and love you so much as Carter. And Mindy and I are like, oh, Carter, this beard looks so cute. So we were very much into the aesthetic.
Yeah. Well,
because
that's cool.
Carter is, it's another version as we're watching Kirsten and Zandy have this dynamic going on where something's broken and he comes into her life where she is made to feel something, and it's not unrealistic. She's meant to feel, you know, whatever those pheromones are creating, but he makes her feel good. And he's a very similar character to Sandy. And do you remember anything about being on set or any fan reaction or how the set was or anything like that?
I do. I mean, I remember coming down there. Wasn't it like Manhattan Beach or something? Where were the studios?
Yeah.
Manhattan Beach? Mm-hmm. That's right. And I remember coming down there and... I mean, everybody was super nice. Of course, Gallagher was fantastic. He's so much fun to be around, and everybody was super, super nice. I remember being kind of surprised. not because I had heard differently, but because I always assume that, you know, you're going to get to a set and it's going to be kind of a seething pit of something or other, and. Maybe you guys were pretending or something, but everybody seemed quite nice. I remember being on set, and I remember what else do I remember? I remember for some reason I remember being in or around a party scene, but maybe it was just a party scene that was shooting the same day because I don't think my character was in a party.
I think you were
kind.
At the party where the porno is played for everyone to see.
Julie's porno is revealed and you're in front of the audience for the launch of the magazine, the porno is revealed instead of a video.
Okay. Yes. So I was at a party. Yes, that's right.
You were at the porn party.
All right.
As I've said before, we get to do this and reconnect and have a conversation about something that we collectively went through together. And it was, and it's really just fun, you know? And I can't tell you how many of the crew members or writers, all of the cast and crew, they're really enjoying hearing these memories from everybody and everyone's contributions to the show that really, just for four seasons, had quite a bit of a cultural impact. And
oh my gosh. I mean, I get recognized for the OC over here in Norway.
It's crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did like six crummy episodes and I, like people are like, and I have a huge white beard and I'm like got farm clothing on and I'm, you know, and they're like, were you on the OC? I'm like, what, are you kidding? So.
Oh, that's very
there you
cool.
go. Certainly, that's why we're doing this.
Certainly, it certainly was a huge thing. That's for sure.
That being said, if you don't, we'd love to go through the episode and chat about it and give any of your opinions or thoughts or memories. And Rachel, you want to do that synopsis?
Yeah, I'll read the synopsis, sure. Sandy, Ryan, and Seth devise a plan to save Trey from going to jail after he took the fall for supplying drugs at his birthday party. Kirsten and Carter grow closer as they take a trip to Featherbrook's winery for a wine tasting party. Seth, Summer, and Zach attend a party to discuss their upcoming graphic novel, and Caleb returns from his trip questioning his marriage to Julie. This was directed by Tony Warmby, written by Mike Kelly, and the original air date was April 21st, 2005. This was season 2, episode 20, The OC Confidential, by the way.
I was just thinking the feather, like the, I think I had one moment, the one moment that I really loved of, here's an actor, the moment I loved of me was at the Featherbrook Winery when the gal comes, we, Kelly and I have gotten tipsy and we're sitting at the bar and the gal comes along. She's, I think we've asked her to find us a car or we're asking her to find us a car to give us a ride home. And she says, where to? And I say, where do you live? And I said, Orange County, I think. And she kind of goes, oh. And I go, yeah. like, she's got this.
Like you're embarrassed. She's got,
yes. She's got this like snobbish thing about Orange County. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And I just thought it was, I was so surprised that the producers left it in there. that it was like, it was so sort of meta in a way.
Right. Oh, well, we found that this whole show is very meta. We're constantly, Josh is an outsider from Rhode Island, and he's constantly making fun of the OC in everything we do. And
then he must have loved that moment. He's probably the guy, he's probably the reason that moment survived.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
In the Cohen kitchen, you know, the rager just happened and Trey was arrested in the last episode. But Seth and Ryan, they're discussing Trey. And surprise, Ryan doesn't think that Trey did it. And just the episode before, he was hanging out, he was accusing him of doing buying coke and speed. But he does some things, but he's not a dealer. Not, this is a new Ryan. Like, he's turned over a new leaf. And I'm glad that he's at least taking it in stride. And Seth says well, why? Why do you think that he did this? And he said, because I was about to do the same thing. I was going to take responsibility for the drugs to save Marissa. And Seth says, oh yes, the compulsive need to save Marissa Cooper, that must be in the Atwood DNA, which we find is, something that the Atwoods would do just to save Marissa.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing theme.
What I thought was funny from the opening scene is they talk about 21 Jump Street and the callback is Richard Grieco, right?
That's very meta as well.
Right.
That's great.
Right. But then I was thinking kids today probably don't even know who that is and would think Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill is 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But I did a most of a series down in Miami Beach and Richard Grieco was down there doing some other pilot for some other TV series. Oh gosh, and what happened? I know I have a Richard Grieco anecdote.
Night at the Roxbury, they do a big old Richard Grieco thing. Is that dating myself too? Night at the Roxbury? Probably. Whatever.
Yes, dating yourself.
Yeah, right.
It's okay. I own it.
So Trey brings Sandy, or Sandy brings Trey home, rather, and says that he's facing some hard time, but Trey's going to stay with the Coens because he's under house arrest and under Sandy's protection. Wonder what that's going to bring up. So now right. Over at the Newport group, Kirsten is speaking to Sandy on the phone, and he gives her the download on Trey. And she's so preoccupied that she doesn't care that Trey's going to be at the house because she certainly cared. Anyway, let's move on from that. We know she's preoccupied, but he says, oh gosh, he's not going to be able to go to Featherbrook. And basically he says, you know, you should, you know, Carter's taking Aaron, and Kirsten's face is like, oh, really? Oh, and then you should go anyway. And she says, oh, I don't want to be a third wheel. But Kirsten, I just love watching Kelly's performance throughout all of this because she's very subtle and she's this very slightly Julie Cooper manipulative because she's the one that ruined the Aaron Carter thing.
Yeah, she planted the seed that, like, you're not ready to date because you're still, you know, getting through your divorce.
Oh my gosh, that's right. That's right. Uh-huh. I totally forgot that. Yes, I totally forgot that. Yeah.
She was jellies.
Here's a question. Do you think she did that on purpose?
Yes.
Or do you think Carter was actually... Okay, never mind.
I think she's jealous. I think she was jealous.
She was, but I think it is a little of both because she does show up in one episode where you're wasted and it's your anniversary of something or other, I think. And you're...
That's right.
So
that's right.
There is, like, there's truth to it, but she's definitely coming from a place of jealousy. That's at the forefront.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, it's she's killing two birds with one stone.
Yes.
She's being truthful and accomplishing something.
Yes. As women do. Your hair is completely unique, and the key to good hair days is using ingredients that benefit your hair. That's where Function of Beauty comes in. Function of Beauty is the world's first fully customized hair care that creates individually filled shampoos, conditioners, styling, and treatment formulas.
I love Function of Beauty. You guys know that I called it the coop. And I took the hair quiz and selected the goals that I wanted for my hair. My hair has goals. And I love their shampoo and conditioner. And my hair is colored, as you guys know. I add this nice little saucy red to it. And it keeps the color rich. And I recommend it highly.
I love Function of Beauty. It's so much fun formulating your own personal recipe. Not only does my hair smell amazing because you can pick your scent, it is so shiny. When I have to blow dry it, I always use Function of Beauty first. And the results are flawless.
Say goodbye to generic hair care for good. Today, go to functionofbeauty.com/OC to take your hair goal quiz, and you'll save 25% on your first order.
Go to functionofbeauty.com/OC to let them know you heard about it from our show and to get 25% off your first order.
That's functionofbeauty.com/OC to take your hair quiz and save 25% on your first order.
Typical children's vitamins are basically candy in disguise filled with 2 teaspoons of sugar. Unhealthy chemicals and other gummy junk growing kids should never eat. That's why Hiya was created. The pediatrician-approved super-powered chewable vitamin. Now, my daughter loves taking vitamins because they think it's a treat. But now, it still tastes like a treat. It's delicious. And I know it's just good stuff going into her body.
So my daughter, obviously, is a little bit older. She tried them. She loved them. But then I was able to give them to some dear friends of mine who are 5 and 9, Caleb and Lila. They love them. And kids, you know that they're getting some good nutrients with these vitamins. Hiya fills in the most common gaps in modern children's diets to provide the full body nourishment our kids need with a yummy taste they love. And we've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. Receive 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, you must go to hiyahealth.com/theoc.
This deal is not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/theoc and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Okay, so over at the Cooper house, mm-hmm. is a completely different morning. You know, usually at the Coens, we have these, you know, great family moments and they're just saving the world with Sandy, the superhero. But over at the Cooper house, Julie's back and she's, and Marissa is surprised that Julie's not mad about the rager. In fact, she says, oh no, not a big deal. Just as long as we don't have to tell Caleb. And then she says that she has to have some personal sacrifices with a date with Caleb that night, which is way too much information for poor Marissa. Because, you know, she's not exactly what she's modeling that she's giving. Oh, I don't know. That Julie's basically a whore, basically. Sorry to expand on that. But
to put it lightly.
I know. And she's like, you can have all the personal sacrifices you want, Mom. I'm going to Summers. So just showing the difference between the Cooper and the Coens here.
Yeah. There's so many storylines going on in this episode. Everyone is kind of doing something different. Then we're at school and we have the trifecta of Zach, Summer, and Seth where it's just a mess. And that they were fighting and Summer's mad about the Reed situation because the boys are working with a female on their graphic novel who she thought was a male.
That's
and
right.
Seth was lying. Yeah. And anyway, so that's going on, the drama with those three. And Zach is being more manipulative that we've been talking about, Melinda. I'm seeing it a bit more.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. He's just becoming so, yes. He's so messing with them. And, you know, Seth gives this really sweet thing about the daisy flower and he's going to bring one every day. And Summer says, oh, it's so sweet. And he says, and I have, of course, his favorite band, Death Cab Tickets. And then Zach says, oh, didn't you get the email? We have to go over some notes. And he's just doing it with this Cheshire grin. And yeah, so manipulative. But it's also just working out for him where he's, you know, it's just setting up for these two boys to really go at odds with this, what do you call it? The demented threesome?
We can call it that.
There's a word for it. I think that's the wrong word that you call. Summer calls it something.
I do.
Yeah.
Oh, in this episode, I do.
Yeah, yeah. She calls it something else. Maybe I'm saying it wrong.
Demented Threesome is a good name. Is a good band name.
Yeah, for sure.
I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, we appreciate anything you throw in. And then, you know, we're seeing this whole other plan unfold and Marissa and Ryan are talking about Trey and they want to figure out who brought the drugs to the party to get Trey off the hook. So that's setting in motion.
Yeah, she thinks it's this guy, Kyle. Does everyone have like that one person in high school that you knew where to go
for
drugs?
Did you say, oh yeah? Where did you grow up, Billy?
Well, I grew up all over the place, but I was in a Baptist military academy from fifth grade through 10th grade.
Wow.
And then that was in Virginia. Then I went north to a school in the suburbs of Chicago, New Trier East High School. So I went from a little Baptist military academy of like 400 students to a large public school on the north side of Chicago with like 3,000 students, and I just overloaded. I remember they had undercover people come into the school and were like asking. Oh no, they weren't undercover. Somebody was coming. I don't know. Anyway, the question was they asked the student, "Is there a drug problem here at the school?" And the student said, no, that you can get anything you want. There's no problem.
Oh.
So, I went from one to the other. And then, yeah.
Yeah, Marissa figures out who that guy is. So that's easy peasy. So now Kyle is the target. But now we go into the Newport group where Carter comes right in to tell Kirsten that Aaron left me a message and apparently she doesn't think it's good for us to start seeing each other. I thought we hit it off. And of course, this is where Kirsten's like, sorry.
Oopsie.
I may have had something to do with that.
Uh-huh.
But then he says that he has this Mustang, right? That he's going to, you know, take them up and you offer Kirsten to come as well. And she declines, right?
She is tempted. She was, it's not very sporting of her to scare the other gal away and then be so, you know, so not forthcoming when we're in Featherbrook together and all tipsy and everything. I thought I was disappointed.
I know she didn't give it up.
No.
She dangled that carrot.
She dangled the carrot and then snatched it away.
So then we are at school and Marissa talks to Jess. So they're doing the whole thing and the whole plan. Still, the wheels are still moving and Jess tells her to find her the Death Cab show. So we know everyone's going to Death Cab tonight. And then we are in the Cohen kitchen. So I wanted to bring this up, Mindy, because Sandy is talking about the prosecutor in the case with Trey. And you had a funny little anecdote about this.
Yes, the name of the prosecutor is Tom McGinty. And that's a nod to our own McGee, Joseph McGinty Nickel. But he's a conservative Irish Catholic prosecutor with 8 kids, 6 are girls. And Sandy's thinking he's not going to get any leeway.
Yeah.
It's a very serious LA law moment. And which is interesting because there was, once we go, you know how they put establishing shots into the next scene? Mm. Because they're going up to Silver Lake. It was downtown LA and it was just exactly like LA law used to look like. Anyway. Just a little thing I noticed.
Manhattan Studios, did the Practice used to shoot there as well?
I think so. Didn't it?
All the David Kelly stuff was there.
Yeah.
Was that David Kelly?
I did an episode of The Practice, I think, or a couple of them. And I thought I had come to the same studio that you guys were in.
Yeah, okay. I think that's right. So then in Silver Lake, Zach and Seth are meeting with Reed and Damon for Atomic County. And I remember this house. I actually remember being at this location and it was in Venice Beach.
Mm. Yeah, this character, Damon, what a tool. So annoying. And I so recognized that this is exactly, all over the conversations we've had with Josh and this is exactly probably what every executive or possible thing was said to him as this show, The OC, was being developed. You're like, kids in the heartland won't know, you know, and he's saying, but the point of The OC is the character and, oh, the magic flask, can't we change it to Gatorade? You know, everything that he said kind of represented probably everything that's ever been said to Josh. So that's that meta moment again that we, you know, we had Ben Gibbard on from Death Cab and I just want to make sure that we mentioned this is the Death Cab episode and it's so funny. Because we'll find out a little bit later because Seth is missing it.
Yeah.
I think that's so funny that Josh, that they created this thing that, you know, Death Cab is Adam's favorite band in real life. And then Death Cab came on our show and
he didn't
they
get
have
to be in the-
Seth not there. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yep.
That's definitely a Josh thing, right?
Yes, for sure.
That's funny.
Then Julie, we're at your house, and what are you doing? Well, you have an American Beauty moment here.
So that American Beauty moment, shooting that with the flowers, the petals, and it was Tony Warmby, right?
Yeah.
Where he's going, oh, Melinda, just look at the camera, give it to... And I'm thinking, what is she looking at? Is there a mirror on the ceiling? But he had me looking into the lens, right? And I'm like, so Julie and Caleb have a mirror. And she really is... I mean, those things are so awkward to do, not only... And then to watch. And then Caleb walks in and he's like, what's all this? And she's like, what do you think it is? And he says... looks like one of your movies. And she's so humiliated and instantly like, oh, she feels this small. And I just, oh, he's being so, so cruel. But it's totally great television. Totally soap opera television, isn't it?
I loved
he
it.
He was being, he was so, he was so just, what's the word for it?
He squashed her.
Yeah, he really did.
Yeah. Squashed her.
And not from being on top of her.
He just stepped on her and crushed. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think a bed of petals is too, I don't know. It's not probably good for rolling around and having sex, but who knows?
No.
I don't know.
No, they get stuck everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, we're back at the bait shop and the girls, they find Jess, who Marissa's looking for, obviously. And this whole little thing where Marissa says Summer's stoned and I play stoned, which I'm like embarrassed because I'm like, listen, guys, this is definitely not how you are when you're stoned. It's like, I know better than that. But what I also thought was funny is dialogue they wrote for Summer where I'm like, yeah, where the bands are never too loud to talk over. Like calling out the show where the actors are never speaking loud enough where it should be really loud with the music. I thought that was kind of a funny little thing.
Right.
Yeah.
My favorite line was, total, like, what did you say? Ganja all the way.
It's what's from the earth
is of the greatest worth.
Was that an ad lib, Rachel?
I wish I could take credit, but sadly, I think it was written.
Yeah. It was hilarious. Anyway, I loved your delivery.
Thanks.
The songs that Death Cab were playing, the first one was Title and Registration. And then in that scene, it's Movie Script Ending, which I love that song. And then the next one comes.
Yeah. And hearing these songs just brings me back because Brody in real life obviously was always listening to these songs and that album. And so when I heard it, I was like, oh my God, I'm back in 2005. Like everything just comes like flashing back. Okay. So then in the Cohen bedroom, Sandy encourages Kirsten to go to the winery with Carter. Do you think this is odd of her husband, Billy, or do you kind of feel like it's supportive?
No, I thought it was really lovely. He's just a, you know, he just doesn't think that way, and I think it was, I thought that was all super lovely. The whole no, you go, honey.
You know what? As I'm thinking about it, I realized I wrote I wrote you should go up there with Carter. And I was doing it based on what I know about the story. But now hearing you say that, it's only a day trip to Santa Barbara and back for work. Yeah. There shouldn't be any issue with that. And I realized I was putting my own perception I was putting my judgment on it because I know what's going on. But yes, you're absolutely right. There's no reason for them not to do that. Very good.
It would have been very... small of him to have an issue with it. So, and he didn't, his character doesn't seem that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's fair. Okay.
So I agree. Glad you're here. Because I was very upset about it.
No, I'm just kidding. I know. It's interesting. The other perspective.
Yeah.
Back at the bait shop, Sound of Settling is playing by Death Cab and Ryan is on to Kyle and following him. And Seth shows up and kind of does the Seth thing.
He says, I can't believe I missed Death Cab, the last three notes.
I know, he shows up for like literally the last three notes of Death Cab. The irony of with
That's
the ironist. It's pretty good. But there's great improv by Brody at the end of the scene where they're running out after the guys trying to find the dude selling the drugs. And they're like, which way did they go?
Oh, that's right. They didn't, not that way. That's the ocean.
Yeah. I laugh.
You can totally tell the Adam Brody improvs.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
He definitely, when we spoke to him, he always came up with a couple that he knew he'd throw out there. And whether they, you know, and they were always a surprise.
So. Always. A pleasant surprise.
Good for him.
So let's get to the winery, shall we?
Yes.
Yeah, baby.
Get there.
Featherbrook Winery.
Tick-a-boom, boom.
Yeah, you guys show up and Kelly's talking about, or Kirsten, about her messy hair, which it did not look messy.
Kelly's is quite, you know, I hate, well, her hair was always perfect, or at least from my point of view. This was her version of messy.
I think it was lovely.
Yeah.
I thought it looked gorgeous. And I was like, I have a feeling it would, if it was really doing this, it would have been a little messier. But no, she looked beautiful. So Featherbrook, see, I kept thinking that it was up in San Francisco and I had to be, I was corrected that it was in Santa Barbara. But I like you two together. And I like Kirsten's energy. You know, it is interesting that she's able to kind of let go and just enjoy.
Yeah.
And as we see, as they start drinking, it gets a little bit, little more fun, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But we go into Silver Lake, and I just wanted to bring this one up because I had to watch it. I watched the show with subtitles just so I can see what people are saying because I don't want to miss anything. Mm. And I missed that he actually was taking her out to an apology dinner and takes her to an effing party in Silver Lake that's for the summer comic book.
Yeah. Silver Hell. Summer calls it Silver Hell.
Which it is, right? You know, she's like, she's stuck in a car and he's like, actually, I'm taking you out to apologize for what's been going on. But no, we're actually going to a comic book party.
No, I'd be pissed.
You know, I understand.
And she is.
Because I was thinking she wasn't very supportive. But then I was like, no, he just keeps manipulating and lying and doing it. Seth is very frustrating, Billy.
Yeah, I could tell.
Very.
These are real people now.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so the kids know who the dealer is. So now that's going to happen. Then we're at the Mermaid Inn and Julie goes to see Lance to tell him, don't kill Caleb.
Yeah. Well, she shows up just because she says, I need a drink and I need someone to talk to. And Lance is still there. And he pours her the largest glass of whiskey I've ever seen. Like, that, who drinks it was like that it, much?
It was like he was pouring a Long Island iced tea or something.
Yeah. It's getting you nice and toasty.
It's interesting that because Julie is so about all of the appearances and of course, you know, she's this perfect put together woman. But with Lance, she's the chick from Riverside. So she just needed to hang out with him. And he basically says, you know what? I'll switch out his pills. I'll kill him for you. And she's like, here's $5,000. Get out of town. Mm-hmm. And the important part of this scene is that as they leave, that and she gives them this kind of intimate goodbye kiss, but of course we know that's all it is. Mm-hmm. But we have some PI taking pictures.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's going to happen there? There we go.
Right.
Back at the winery.
Back in the winery. Here we are. Carter and Kirsten are drunk.
You guys do good drunk. You guys do good drunk. Acting and being a drunk is a skill.
It's actually really liberating in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, I don't know. It's like, you know, when I was in acting school, I don't know if anybody ever gave you this trick, but you know, I was doing a scene where I had to dance, okay, on stage, and I'm terribly, terribly self-conscious. If you were to come up with anything to make me more self-conscious, you couldn't. And I was horribly self-conscious. And the acting teacher, Milton Katselis. Do you remember Milton Katselis? No, maybe.
I went to the Playhouse. There?
Did you go to the Playhouse? Yeah.
I went to the Playhouse in 1988, yeah.
Okay, that was my first stop when I came to town in 84, I think it was. Yeah. And he said, he stopped the middle of the scene. He's like, okay, all right, this is excruciating. It's excruciating, you know, as much for us as it is for you, I think. And he said, I'm going to give you a trick. He said, now you come on stage and you're going to dance, but you're not a great dancer. You're a guy who thinks he's a great dancer, but he's not, right?
Mm. Right?
And I was like, holy shit. And it completely, completely freed me, right?
Wow.
And I've used it for many, many things since. Like I don't know how to do this or that, or I'm terribly self-conscious in this scene. All right, I'm just going to pretend I'm a guy who thinks he knows how to do this well, but doesn't. And it's right. Completely liberating. So when we are, you know, at Featherbrook Winery, there's something about, I think what I thought at that point in time was like, you know, I'm just a guy who's pretending to be with it, but he's not.
Mm.
And And I don't know, there's something about being a little, like having to play a little drunk that it frees me in the same way.
Yeah. You do it well.
Well, no, I say drunk acting is, you know, it's not what you think it is, because people who drink don't try to act drunk. It's more just
they try to act straight. Yeah.
Right.
Everything's very precise, you know.
Right.
Yes.
And with a maybe a little roll of the tongue, possibly, but nothing's ever it's like Foster Brooks was Foster Brooks, but not But you're not supposed to do that. But it was great to see, because Kelly and I used to go out and drink a lot of wine. And that was she did it really well too. And we could, she's more of a Barolo girl.
Oh, I love a Barolo.
You know. Yeah, right. You know, I kept asking myself, is this awkward or is it tension? Are they, you know, and they're really, you know, and the truth is you can just enjoy someone's company and but is it necessarily sexual? So I think I'm trying to pay attention to the nuances of the performances. And I can see that it's really about really truly liking this human being and being able to escape some of the turmoil or trauma or conflict that she's going, going on with her at home in her domestic life. So
she walked a really, really fine line with everything she was doing. And I just was so impressed. I thought she just walked it perfectly.
Yeah. You do one thing though in this scene where it made me laugh because the woman, the other actress comes up to you and I don't remember the exact dialogue, but you just say to her, yes, it's okay. It'll be all right. And has nothing to do with what she's just asked you. And I just thought it was brilliant because it made me laugh. And like, you know, you're drunk. You're like, you're not even answering her question. It was really funny.
No, I wasn't. Right. I was still on the spill
wine,
on my shirt.
Spill.
Yeah. And I was preemptively cutting off her concern for the wine on my shirt, but she wasn't even concerned with it.
No, so. Not at all. Yeah. That was good. I definitely liked that. Yeah.
But you know what? The thing was, if I hadn't been like, you know, playing drunk, I would never have, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's so freeing that you like, you know, if I had been just not playing drunk, I'd have been like, okay, what's the dialogue? And I gotta stick to the dialogue and whatever. Anyway.
Then we're at the party and Marissa and Ryan arrive at this party, but they're not gonna let Ryan in, right? Because these water polo players.
Because it's a red velvet rope party.
Yeah, basically. But she winds up sneaking him in the side door. And Marissa finds Jess and they're talking about candy flipping, which is a mix of mushrooms and ecstasy. I remember that term. So I think it was a thing, you know, because I definitely was familiar to me when I heard it. I didn't do it myself, but I was familiar with the words candy flipping. What a mess.
I did plenty of both and I never did them together.
That's what I'm saying. Like together, that sounds awful.
No, it doesn't. It's nothing I would ever have done.
Hey, brain, go this way. Oh, no, I'm going to go this way.
Yeah, that sounds like a disaster in my personal opinion. Anyway, so that's...
right.
Yes, so that's on. And the song E Talking by Soul Wax is playing.
All right, that was a cool song, though.
That is a cool song. But then we're back at the Cooper Nickel House and Caleb's waiting for Julie in the dark. It's a little weird.
he hears her driving up and he turns off all the lights. And he's like,
that was creepy.
Yeah.
We had a meeting. And and now it's like, you know, he's saying that he wants a divorce. But when it says are these real tears? And you got to come up with the real tears. Mm-hmm. And so I just noticed that. And I remember the night, you know, I remember like not getting it the first take or something and having this thing where I'm like, I'll let you know when I'm ready. You know, we actors, we go away. And because they're doing the close-up. And I can't come back. And there's a continuity error because in the wide shot, my hair is very perfect when I walk in. And by the time they get to the scene where the big crocodile tears, the bangs are like this. Because whatever my prep was. And I'm like, we're ready. But your hair. I'm like, I don't care. We're going. For the tears.
Yeah, you
had that was my memory of that.
Very impressive tears, aww, Mindy.
Well, thank you. But yeah, I probably had to go imagine sometimes because I found with this show, the dialogue didn't always, you know, garner some kind of, you know, emotional thing. Like she's upset about the hydrangeas being, you know, not there or something. But I have to go, you know, do some deeper work about, you know, some pretty serious imaginary thing. But when he says, are these real tears? And she says, no one's more surprised than me. And I don't know what to say when he said, he goes, well, when he says, maybe we should have another chance. And she says, I don't know what to say. And he says, maybe thank you. Asshole. I mean, it makes for good television. I'm just enjoying these storylines so much. Anyway,
then we're back at the Featherbrook Hotel room. The room that you guys have been given because you're too drunk to drive.
That's right.
He sobers up with more alcohol.
Well, no, you decide to take a shower to sober up.
I decided to take a shower. No, yeah, the shower is sobering up, but I'm starting off by drinking the minibar, I think.
Yes.
And you know, right. I mean, that's in character, both for the role and for me.
And, yeah, and then the shirt coming off before you hit the bathroom. I mean, you know. I feel like, talk about dangling a carrot, Billy.
Well, the pants didn't come off there, Rach. It was the shirt.
you know they're mirroring exactly what happened with Rebecca and Sandy, that they got stuck and they have to be in a hotel room.
Right.
And there's not two rooms, there's one, and there's no other hotels around.
I did
you
not
know?
Realize
it's all
that.
Those
I
things.
Had no idea.
Yeah.
No.
It was the same thing.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Yeah. I find it's hard for me to remember. I mean, it's hard for me to think of like exactly how much sort of how, I mean, I know there was feeling between them. I'm talking about the characters now, not us, but I know there were feelings between them. I'm it's hard for me to imagine like how far Carter would have been willing to go. I guess he would have been willing to go the whole enchilada, I suppose. But
I think they set it up that it was a very, very real situation that could have, he would have, especially in, you know, with the alcohol and the atmosphere and the romanticism of it and everything, I think it's set up. So
both situations that they're mirroring, they both only get one hotel room. Well, from what we see with Sandy and Rebecca and now with Kirsten and Carter. It's like, interesting. Just one room.
Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. Carry on.
Yeah. No, they want to make sure that they have these same situations. And this brings up an interesting point because now that Sandy and Trey are waiting outside the party, they're on lookout and you know, Kirsten says, I better call Sandy. You know, she's still doing the right things, but she's got this temptation just hovering in front of her. And she explains the situation and he goes, oh, honey, you know, just come tomorrow. And Trey, which is, you know, fine, but Trey says, I don't know any man that would suggest that. And he says, well, you don't know anybody. Do you know any men that are married for 20 years? And it goes to your point that it's almost like he's been in this situation. He's been in situations where coworkers had affection for him and he was able to say no. And he's been in a situation where his old flame came back and he was able to say no. And he's saying to himself inside, in my opinion, that my wife could be in a situation, but she's going to do the same thing I did. And I'm choosing to trust her, even if there were something there, because he has made comments about you guys have been working late and, you know, he's made little comments, but he's choosing to trust her because no matter what, he can't control her. He can't do anything no matter what happens. Yeah. He's not going to say, hey, you better not. And that's kind of, I think, what he's presenting is this very solid relationship. And I trust my wife. And no matter what happens, we're still good. So,
yeah. And as on that trust note, then they get a knock at the door at the hotel room that they found a car to take them back. But Kirsten doesn't automatically say, great, we'll take it. She says, let me get back to you on that.
Yeah, she does, yeah. Doesn't she?
Yeah, yeah. Sure does.
She's thinking,
right?
And where am I at that point? I'm in the shower.
Yeah.
And I'm in the shower there, and I'm in the shower, and I'm just waiting, and I'm thinking, any moment she's going to walk in the bathroom door and drop her robe. Any moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is true. Is that is like, if I go take a shower as a man, would you think, wouldn't it be a great fantasy if she just showed up in here? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You would.
He was like, "Yep."
I would have been. That's what. That would have been me. I would have been, you know, wishful mm-hmm. thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Right, right.
Of course. Then we're back at the Silver Lake party, and you know it's just a mess. Summer's pissed, and then Reed is taking Seth away, and Summer's had it, and she's like, "Zach, give me a ride," which is also another callback to the last episode where she's like, "Zach, give me a ride," and Zach takes Summer home from the party. So. We're seeing a little bit of a pattern here.
Oh, I had to write, oh, the Schadenfreude. He's just so basking in Seth's demise with his girlfriend. And he literally is like this little puppet master pulling the strings with that treasure grin again. He's like, yeah, I'll take you. Have fun, Seth. Because we've been saying that this character, Zach, he's just literally on paper and in person the most perfect person. And I'm like, this watch, just wait. He's a demon water polo player and he keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
We'll see it all. We're back at the hotel room and Kirsten tells Carter that they found, or the winery found a car for them. And you don't want to go, Carter. Billy.
No. No,
yeah, you sit down on the bed with your wet hair and mm-hmm. having that like that close intimate. This is where, and I kid you not, I swore in my mind there was a kiss here. And
was there?
Man, it was
no. So then we're at the beach and Marissa is meeting with Kyle, the drug dealer, and their whole sting operation.
Yeah, because
it's about to go down.
Jess gives her the drugs and says, but you have to meet, or, you know, but you have to meet Kyle.
He wants to meet
and
you.
And when she meets him, yeah. And she's like, oh, whoa, I've got a boyfriend. He's like, I don't care. As if he has the right to put hands on her. And then this is like this is our 21 Jump Street scene, right? This choreographed, let's do it. It's so contrived and so television. You've got the prosecutor, you've got Trey, you've got everyone in the police cars,
right.
And
oh,
the lights come up,
and he's busted, and Trey is free.
What a moment!
What a moment!
Right, right.
In the OC,
he just like right. The timing's just right where he, as he runs, that Trey's pretty rad, actually. He's badass. He's very Van Damme. And and the door opens and it's just boom. And then, of course, well, Kyle and Ryan go fist to cuff. And, you know.
You were saying Trey's so Van Damme, but have you seen the movie he did, Uploaded or Downloaded or something like that?
Oh, I know it. Someone else told me about it and how
it's
awesome
fantastic.
He is.
And he's really, really, really good. You should really see it.
Is it a recent one?
He's a great actor.
He's pretty terrific.
Yeah. What is that movie? I know what you're talking about.
I think it's called Upload, maybe, or it's either Upload or Download or something.
Logan Marshall Green?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Van Damme.
No.
That's hilarious. Upgrade. It's called Upgrade, and it was 2018.
Upgrade.
Yeah.
Upgrade.
That's
okay.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
John Vaughn. You really thought he was talking about John Vaughn Van Damme.
I was really confused.
He was amazing in this movie.
He's a really...
Yeah. And they call me Chance because my mama took one.
Because, Rachel, when you said he's a really, really good, and I thought you were going to say action star, and you went actor, I went...
Oh, man. We used to say when I was growing up, Jean-Claude Van Damme, I look good. That was like what the boys said in my elementary school. little fact for you guys.
Yeah, and Marissa and Ryan are in the car and they look at each other.
Oh,
and
they finally
like,
kiss.
Yeah, they're sitting in the car and they're like, well, what do you want to do? And I'm thinking in their brains, they're like, I want to kiss you. So they kiss, and then Marissa says, "We've been waiting a long time for this. Why don't we go somewhere a little more intimate, back to the pool house, right?" But then when Trey goes into the apartment, Little Miss Jess is there to meet him and wants to know why Trey didn't turn her in.
Yes, that's right.
She's just actually, like, good little character. Yeah. Good little bad character.
Yeah.
So this whole time that they've been hanging out and they, you know, she's back. Oh, wait, I'm jumping ahead. So I won't say that. But when he says, because this whole time he was saying to Sandy, you know, I met Jess and we were talking, and does talking mean sex? I think it does. Right.
Let's
because
go with,
I was
yes.
admitting. Yeah. So anyway, so there, that teases for the end, for the next episode, that now we've got Trey and troublemaker Jess. And that is the end of our episode.
The end of that episode.
Norway, Pasadena, and Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So does Carter, the next episode is Carter's swan song?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Aww. I'm going to be sad to see Carter go. Billy, if you're willing, we have a rapid fire to do with you. If you are so inclined.
Okay.
You want to go first, Mindy?
Sure. Red wine or white wine?
Red wine.
Hmm. Rocket pack or teleport?
Rocket pack.
Dogs or cats?
Wait, I'm sorry?
Dogs or cats?
Oh, I thought you said Dodger caps. And I was like...
You're like,
what
Viking
does that
caps?
Even mean? Like Dodger caps. Like, no, I don't like baseball at all. Dogs or cats? Cats.
Favorite role you've ever played?
Cardinal.
Salty or sweet?
Salty and sweet. Sorry. Sweet. No, salty.
Convertible or hard top?
Convertible.
Romantic comedies or dramas?
Dramas.
Favorite city you've lived in?
Vancouver.
Nice.
Oh, Halifax. No, good. Vancouver.
Is Halifax where you shot Cardinal?
No. We were in Sudbury.
Oh, you were in Sudbury, Ontario? My goodness.
Suds. Yeah. Did you work in Sudbury?
No, I've spent a lot of time in a place called Uxbridge, Ontario, which is an hour north of Toronto. But
yeah,
I know all the surrounding bits of northern Ontario.
We were in Suds and North Bay and Muskoka and all over the place.
Nice. Yep.
It has been an absolute pleasure to see you. And thank you for taking the time all the way from Norway.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. It's been a real kick to see you both. It's funny, isn't it? How what we do is like it's like a living, breathing yearbook. You know what I mean? Like like other people have yearbooks that stay the same, but you know, it's been a real. It was a pleasure to do the show, and back then when we did it, and it was a pleasure to reminisce with you. So Thank you so much.
It brings up a lot of memories for me because I remember literally drilling you on this tall ship experience and adventure that you were going on. And you were so forthcoming in the experience. And I remember thinking like, oh yes, because Hollywood isn't the center of the world. There are other things out there. And I had my own adventure right after the OC. And so it was... I remember it very, very, very fondly. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well,
and congrats on
thank
Cardinal.
You guys.
And I'm looking forward to watching it and your beautiful family.
Let me know what you think. And Rachel, give my best to your dad. Will
I
you?
Will. Absolutely.
And to Kelly and Peter, when and if you talk to them.
I will, for sure.
Thank you, Billy. So good to see you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review Welcome to the OC Bitches wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube.
Bye, bitches. But now we're at the bait shop and We got to speak with Ben Gibbard. And
I like your farm noises.
This is the Bait Shop episode.
I promise it's not me. It's the washing machine was the washing machine was on, and it makes it, you know, when it does that thing, it makes the kitchen sink gurgle.
Yep.
So it's not me.
When Shopify says you can sell anywhere, they mean it. Woo, hold up. Just got a new sale. Whoa, Shopify doesn't mind if you're at sea level or on top of the world.
Whether you're selling carabiners or crop tops, start selling with Shopify today and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I am a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh. And
that's I'm Rabia.
But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you'll like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Khalif Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.